back to it, it would
I haven't gotten a
You're good to
signal.
go, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I'm opening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue. It's Thursday, February 4th. Let's start with calling the roll, and if anyone is not here, we'll expect to see them shortly. But please call the roll.
Representative Hernandez?
Here by phone.
Representative Levy?
Here by video.
Representative Marsh?
Marsh is here by video.
Representative Smith?
Representative Smith is here by video.
Vice Chair Pham?
Present by video.
Vice Chair Reschke? I'm going to absent. Madam Chair Nathanson?
Let's not mark him absent yet. Let's wait a few minutes to see if he joins us. And this is Nathanson present by video. Thank you for calling roll. I'm opening the informational meeting. Mr. Alanak, please introduce this topic for us, Oregon's connection to federal tax law.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. So the presentation is, as you just described, there are, and it's a kind of a continuation of the discussion yesterday. You heard from the CPAs about recent law changes and their recommendations. It was a very thorough report, a lot of detail in there. Now with this discussion, we're going to take a step back and kind of have a conceptual discussion of what does connection mean. And people use different terms interchangeably. We have our federal connection, we have reconnect, and we have disconnect. And depending on the nature of the statement, that's really just how our Oregon tax law is tied to, connected with federal tax law. There are a couple of main decision points there. How are we connected and where are we connected? The how is this issue of a rolling reconnect, which means a continuous ongoing tie, versus a static or fixed connection, means we're tied to IRC as of a specific date. The where is probably one way to think about that is if you think about your federal taxes, both in individual income and corporate, it's a series of math calculations. And the where is where in those calculations do we tie? Where do we connect? The language is a little bit different for the personal income tax and the corporate income tax. So we have a presentation, and that's in, for those people trying to grab it in OLIS, it's Federal Connection Overview. Kyle is going to walk through a detailed description of the personal income tax. And then we'll switch over to Kate, and she's going to walk through a detailed description of the corporate income tax to just provide that background information. I do want to point out that there is another exhibit in OLIS. It's called State Connections. And those are a series of summary tables that, if you're not familiar with this language right now, aren't going to make any sense. But they are tables that show how other states do this. And hopefully by the time Kyle and Kate get through their presentation, you'll be familiar with the terms, and then that document will make a little more sense. But that is really designed to get at the question, well, what are other states do and what are the options at a very, from one perspective. So with that, I think Kyle's ready to jump in, and unless there are questions to start off. I think Kyle's ready to jump in with his portion of the presentation.
Good. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Kyle Easton, Legislative Revenue Office. And yeah, we do have, a slide deck for you in the meeting materials. This is the first one you'll see there, Federal Connection Overview. So I will go ahead and get that shared here as well. Okay, make it a little bigger. Okay, as Chris just set up the discussion for today, again, the plan is to just hit kind of the general discussion of what is the federal connection, what does it mean to be connected to federal tax law, go through a little bit of maybe the purpose or what some of the reasoning behind that. And this is, again, building on sort of some of the discussion the committee had with the CPAs just the other day. And then we'll go into a little more detail on the personal income tax and the corporate income tax. But with that, I'll go ahead and start moving our way through here. So in terms of connection, when you hear the term connection or conformity to federal tax law, this has to do with a state adopting the federal tax code, as Chris said, in terms of a how or a where. And we'll try to view it in terms of those two terms here going forward as well. Hopefully that'll be helpful in terms of how to think through how does Oregon connect and how do other states connect for that matter to federal tax law. But in terms of using the federal tax code, so Oregon has an income tax, both a personal income tax and a corporate income tax, and there's also that at the federal level. So there is this ability for the states to use that federal income tax and all the statute and the administration and everything that goes into that federal income tax, the state can then use that or adopt that for its own uses. So in terms of a starting point, an example that might work here is you could think of it as the most maybe extreme case, if you will, of connecting federal tax would be simply connecting to the final tax liability of a taxpayer. So Oregon could connect and say, whatever your federal tax liability was, just, you know, send that same amount of money or cut us the same check here in Oregon that you did at the federal tax level. And that would be a full connect directly to that final tax liability. Now, generally what states do is instead they're focusing on a connection point related to income that is subject to the income tax. So on the personal income tax, this will often be adjusted gross income or taxable income. On the corporate side of things, the question often comes up connecting to taxable income before or after net operating losses and special deductions. And again, we'll get into this in a little more detail here forthcoming. And then, of course, kind of a third way that we see other states connect is sort of this selective connection, which might be a hybrid of the two, where a state picks up some forms of income, maybe not others. It's not as simple as just pointing to that adjusted gross income at the federal level or taxable income at the federal level. But again, as a way to maybe visualize this in your mind is to think it, with Oregon connects to the definition of federal taxable income, but from a standpoint of when a taxpayer files their personal income tax return, the way Oregon's tax returns start is it says, well, grab your federal adjusted gross or your federal adjusted gross income, put that on your Oregon return, and then continue on with the Oregon calculations. So in that way, it kind of sets the stage for how a taxpayer then fills out their Oregon return. But in terms of maybe backing up to a higher level, what's some of the purpose of the connection? And this was a question that came up with the CPA discussion as well. And in many cases, this is coming from an administrative standpoint. So from the state standpoint, the government standpoint, utilizing the federal statutes, rulings, and interpretations that go into the income tax can be beneficial, right? There's a lot of work that goes into just the length alone of the Internal Revenue Code is quite substantial, but there's a lot of work that goes into those statutes and then the rulings and interpretations that come through on the court side or just rulings and interpretations through the IRS that the state can then adopt to. And that can help with the tax enforcement and assessment as well. So if you think from terms of Oregon, if let's say a taxpayer, they're audited at the federal level and the IRS finds that the taxpayer didn't include some income that they should have. So they underreported their income. Well, if that's caught at the federal level, Oregon can pick that up as well. So Oregon can kind of piggyback off of some of that federal enforcement and assessment on the tax returns as well. So there can be some benefit from that standpoint. If you're thinking from the taxpayer, It can definitely be helpful administratively for the taxpayer as well through the consistency of definitions, requirements. Certainly it can be easier for a taxpayer to, they know how they're keeping their accounting books for their federal taxes. If Oregon's connected there, and you definitely hear this from the CPAs, then they don't have to keep like that second set of books in some cases. So for the taxpayer, they can then use some of these same rules and such to file their Oregon taxes and kind of track things and make sure that they're fulfilling the requirements for filing here in Oregon by using those same federal requirements. And the last thing is tax compliance can work the other way for the taxpayer as well, where it can just be easier in some cases for a taxpayer to stay in compliance, knowing that they know the federal law, and then that connects then to Oregon's law. So this is a slide some of you will be familiar with as we shared before, but this is specific to the personal income tax.
Excuse me, Mr. Easton, since we're switching to a new slide, I just wanted to quickly acknowledge and welcome Representative Reschke to the meeting.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I think I saw your hand go up briefly. Did you have a question?
Yes, and then I answered it. So, you know, that's how quick I am this afternoon. So appreciate the special welcome, and I am here present by video. So thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Easton.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. So yes, this chart, this diagram, if you will, may be familiar. Some of you have seen this before, but it's trying to display the various or the two connection points that most states choose in terms of selecting where to connect to the federal tax system. But the way this flow chart is really set up is you have your total income. So this is from a taxpayer perspective. So you start with your total income, and that can be, you just think summing up wages, it could be interest income, business income that's being passed through, just all the sources of income that would be potentially subject to the income tax. And then we have what gets referred to as above the line deductions, which are also known as income adjustments. And these are things that might be included in total income, and then they get subtracted out. So the tax law has said we don't want to include these things in income. So it's similar to a deduction, really. That's why we call it an above the line deduction, is it's a deduction that's available to taxpayers without having to itemize their deductions. And probably the biggest example of an above the line deduction is a deduction that's available to a lot of times self-employed individuals for the other half of their payroll taxes. So if you're a wage earner or you're an employee, your employer is picking up half of those payroll taxes. Well, if you're self-employed, you still have to pay the full amount. You're picking up both halves, really, and then this gives you an ability to deduct that half that would normally be your employer's portion from your income. But so the total income minus above the line deductions gets you to adjusted gross income. And this is one potential connection point. And we do see that, and you'll see that in the other chart that Chris mentioned of the other states. There are many other states that choose adjusted gross income as sort of that connection point. And when you choose it, when a state chooses a connection point, what they're basically doing is saying, well, anything, I try to think of it as anything upstream from this adjusted gross income, so anything related to total income or above the line deductions, that's what the state is connecting to at the federal level. So any change at the federal level to maybe they create a new above the line deduction or they remove one, that automatically flows through to adjusted gross income, and that's where it can essentially change the state tax policy through that connection. The feds make the change, it flows through to the state because they're connected to adjusted gross income. Moving further down the stream, if you will, from adjusted gross income, the next thing you subtract is deductions. So this could be the standard or itemized deductions. And after subtracting the deductions, you land on taxable income. And this is where Oregon connects to the federal definition. So the big difference between Oregon's connection point at taxable income versus another state that might be at adjusted gross income is Oregon would include these deductions, and any changes made at the federal level to those deductions would be incorporated into Oregon's connection point to the definition of taxable income. So if there's a change at the federal level related to, say, the mortgage interest deduction, that would flow through to Oregon because Oregon is connected downstream of that, of those itemized deductions. And that's really the point.
Representative Reschke has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Kyle, just so I'm clear, can you give an example of an above the line deduction, and I think you gave an example of one of the standard itemized deductions, just so I have a understanding of that.
Yeah, Representative Reschke. So itemized deduction, I think one that people know of is the home mortgage interest. Charitable deductions could be an itemized deduction. Those are two of the bigger ones. There's also state and local taxes in some cases. So like your property taxes could be deducted. In terms of above the line, I think the biggest in terms of dollar wise is going to relate to self-employed individuals and deducting. If you think of a self-employed individual, they are responsible for the full amount of their payroll taxes, their FICA taxes. And for an employee, your employer would be covering half of those. You'd be responsible for half, your employer would be responsible for half. Well, for a self-employed individual, they're responsible for the full amount, but then they get to deduct half from their income, which more or less treats them the same than as if they were employed for that tax purposes. Another one you heard about yesterday that was brought up by the CPAs because there was a slight change to it is an above-the-line deduction for teacher classroom expenses, where teachers can deduct up to, I think it was at $300, I believe, most recently, but they can deduct expenses that they use in the classroom from their income up to that certain amount, where the federal change, I think, recently was allowing teachers to include any PPE, personal protective equipment, that they spend as an expense in the classroom. So that's kind of maybe an example of there was a federal change. That federal change is going to flow through to Oregon as that above the line deduction.
Follow-up question, Madam Chair?
Yes, and then we'll hear from Representative Marsh.
Thank you. Just not the advantage, but I guess the difference between connecting it adjusted gross income and connecting it taxable income is that the taxable income method is, if I'm filling out my itemized deductions for the federal government, I am going to fill them out once, and those will just flow through to Oregon unless Oregon has some additions that go back, because we don't accept those. So it's like you said, I think one set of books. Whereas if we move to adjusted gross income, I would have to fill out a deductions for the federal government and then another set for the state government to get to my taxable income. Is that a proper understanding?
Yes, Representative Reschke, in terms of conceptually, yes, that would be correct. We wouldn't be connected to the deductions. And I should mention states, of course, whether you connect it AGI or taxable income, you can certainly selectively disconnect then from deductions and such. So that doesn't tie the hands of the state. It just kind of changes what is the status quo. In terms of deductions, it's actually more complex in terms of how the forms are filled out in this case, where the way Oregon's forms are laid out, it almost appears as if we connect to adjusted gross income, because that's the line that you pull from your federal return and put on your Oregon, and then you would still work your way through the deductions. Adding another layer to that more recently, or in the last few years, was the Tax Cut and Jobs Act at the federal level, where at the federal level, the standard deduction was increased substantially to, at the time, 12 and 24,000, 24,000 for joint. I believe those are indexed. Oregon standard deduction didn't change. So now we're in a situation where Oregon created our own form, our own Schedule A, where you put your itemized deductions, because so many people are taking the standard deduction at the federal level and then itemizing here in Oregon. And that's always been available because there could be circumstances, but because the disparity between those standard deductions is so great, we have definitely seen where at the federal level, I want to say it's like 10% of people are itemizing their deductions, and here in Oregon, it's around 40% which is still consistent with what we've seen. So yes, conceptually right on. In practical way, where the forms are now being filled out, in many cases, the taxpayer is going to be filling out those, and maybe an extra form here in Oregon where they're taking the itemized deduction because it's most beneficial to them.
Thank you, Kyle. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Rep. Marsh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Kyle, I wanted to ask a few more questions in the same realm that Rep. Reschke was, around the difference between the above-the-line deductions and the other deductions. For an individual who is not self-employed, what's an example of an above-the-line deduction?
Yeah, Representative Marsh, that's your question that jumps to my mind. There's also, I think one of the recent ones we've seen, and this was part of the CARES Act, was normally a charitable deduction would require itemizing. And one of the changes in the CARES Act, and I believe this was actually extended for an additional year as well, relates to charitable deductions and making them an above-the-line deduction up to a certain dollar amount. I think it's a few hundred dollars. But that way, for individuals that are taking the standard deduction, and this is definitely a bigger deal, again, at the federal level, if they make that charitable deduction, but they take the standard deduction, in prior years, they wouldn't have had any tax benefit from that charitable, their charitable giving. They wouldn't have had a tax benefit, at least. Now, by moving that to an above-the-line deduction, it's available to everybody who has income to offset. So that would be probably an example that's available to pretty much all the taxpayers at this time. If they make that charitable contribution, they could now temporarily at least take this as an above-the-line deduction.
Madam Chair, a follow-up?
Sure, yes.
So there is no... The decision about where these things sit is really a policy choice, but there's no particular categorization that we can make of what's above the line and what's below the line. It's what decision makers choose to put at any given time. Is that correct?
Yeah, Representative Marsh, it is a specific policy choice. So when it's written into law, I suppose, it would be, do you want this to be an above the line deduction or an adjustment or taken as an itemized deduction? And I think the policy question there would be, if you make it an above the line deduction, it's more likely to be available to all taxpayers than if it's an itemized deduction, which then is only available to those that actually itemize. So if you're taking the standard deduction, you can't actually benefit from an itemized deduction.
Madam Chair, one more question.
Sure, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the advantage, if we decided to look at connecting at the adjusted gross income, is that we are more likely to be able to make decisions on ourselves on a variety of federal decisions around deductions. I mean, it sounds like there's more in the downstream bucket. They're more variable. There may be more controversy potentially around those deductions since they affect more targeted taxpayers, as you're saying, whereas the above the line deductions in general, although we understand that things change all the time, are more likely to be limited and more likely to be more broadly applied across taxpayers. Is that
yes,
fair?
Marsh, that does make sense. One thing I would add that's maybe key in terms of moving to an adjusted gross income from a taxable income is it changes in some cases maybe the whether it's an opt-in or opt-out is sometimes the way I think of it, where if the state is connected at adjusted gross income and there's a change to the deduction policy at the federal level, the state could opt into those changes in a way. The state could pass legislation and say, yeah, we do want to connect to that. We see a lot of cases where states are connected to adjusted gross income and then they selectively connect to the deductions. But that would be largely going to be a point in time connection. So they might say, yeah, we do want to allow the mortgage interest deduction in our state, maybe with different parameters. But the key there then is if there's a federal change, it would rather than being an automatic change in, say, Oregon, it would be up to... It wouldn't automatically be a change in Oregon, but Oregon would have the discretion in that case, the legislative decision, if they wanted to connect, rather than making it an automatic connect into Oregon by being connected further downstream. So I think it opens up maybe a few more policy options or more policy decisions to be made, I suppose.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I'm looking ahead at the document that Mr. Alanak referred to earlier, saying that until we became more familiar with all this lingo, it may not make a lot of sense, but I'm looking at the state connections document and point of connection line 28 or line 29 or line 30, and there's some other detail in there. I don't know if this is a time to quickly show that or if we should just wait and get to that later.
Madam Chair, we might want to wait because the line 28 and line 29 references are actually the corporate income tax. The naming conventions are less creative on the corporate side, I suppose, and all of the general language there for accountants and so forth when we're talking about this. When you say line 28, line 29, they know what that means. So it might be helpful to wait till the end because that particular example is a corporate discussion.
Thanks. Yeah, and then there are plenty of other places where further up in the chart it talks about connecting to the adjusted gross income or the taxable income. I think it's fine to wait until we've had the rest of it. Thanks.
Okay. So in terms of the discussion on AGI or taxable income, that's in many cases the where, but the how to connect could be this connection type. So we're talking rolling point in time or hybrid is how we've titled it. Again, the committee members have probably heard Oregon has a rolling reconnect in terms of or in some ways we have a hybrid, but we have a rolling reconnect to the definition, the federal definition of taxable income. And then anything unrelated to that definition of taxable income, we have a point in time connection. So the rolling reconnect, the importance here is a rolling reconnect means an automatic connection. So if there is a change at say the federal level that flows through to taxable income, a rolling connection automatically picks that up. Whereas a static connection would not automatically pick that up. And the static connection, usually the way that's set up is the state statute, Oregon statute would say Oregon is connected as of December 31st, 2018 or 2019 or a point in time. So it's the state's specifically pointing, it's still connected to the Internal Revenue Code, but it's the Internal Revenue Code as of a certain date. And I've kind of described it before. It's like the way that you could think about it is when you're connected at a certain date, that would be as if you just printed out the Internal Revenue Code on that date, and that's what you're connected to. So a week later, if there's a change, you're not connected to that. The state would then have to move the connection date to incorporate those new changes. So again, Oregon has a hybrid system. I'm looking here, I think we've covered most of this discussion so far. What you see in front of you here is just a pull from a statute. So this is the annual reconnect bill that Oregon has and the committee will see. And this is kind of an example of that point in time connection is pointing to a specific time of that Internal Revenue Code in which to adopt. So in this case, I pulled this is a year behind. So normally we'd be looking at a connection point December 31st, 2020. But you'll see that in legislation later in the session. In terms of kind of an example, I'm trying to think if this would be how this could be helpful. In terms of a connection example, is just coming up with a change at the federal level and how that gets incorporated here in Oregon. The example here is just let's say the federal law at the federal level they change the law and they want to exempt the first $500 in interest income. So under current law, Oregon's connected. So that in this case, the taxpayer would have wages of $50,000. Interest income of $500, so their total income is $50,500. There's a change at the federal level saying we're gonna exempt. We'll say this first $500 in interest income is not subject to taxation. Okay, the federal level that goes to zero, so now the taxpayer's income is $50,000. That same change exists automatically here in Oregon, and so the difference then becomes $500 less in income. And that's just kind of an example of how a federal change flows right through to Oregon. And this $500 then, or this lack of $500, if you will, then reduces the tax liability of the taxpayer potentially equal to $500 times the tax rate. And that's where you can kind of see how that flows right through to Oregon. The last slide I have for you here was to try to list, I guess, some of the policy considerations in how to connect and where to connect, if you will. And this is, again, there's different states and they do it differently. And that's the chart that Chris was talking about listing the other states as well. But in terms of connection to taxable income, it's a little further downstream. This was discussed earlier than say AGI. So the connection to taxable income is going to incorporate more federal changes potentially. This can lessen less automatic policy discretion for the states. So again, the states still have discretion. It just might be the states might be reacting to a federal change a little bit differently, where if you're connected to a point in time, the state, then the decision for the state becomes, do we want to incorporate that recent federal change rather than do we want to incorporate that federal change in a way? Do you want to disconnect from it or do you want to connect to it? Right now, a lot of times Oregon, the question that faces Oregon is, does Oregon want to disconnect from that federal change? Whereas other states, depending where they're connected or if they're at a point in time, their question might be, do we want to adopt that federal change? So it can change kind of that opted-in approach to the federal changes. Connecting AGI, again, that's just a little further upstream, and that really can center on those deductions, those itemized deductions. In terms of the how, or the rolling reconnect versus the static connection, again, the key point there is just whether it's a continuous, an automatic connection, or whether it's a point in time. Because, the rolling reconnect is automatically incorporating any of those federal changes. Those federal changes, again, they could go either way. In some cases, there are, I guess, three ways, where it's like a federal change could have little to no impact on Oregon. You could have a federal change that causes an increase in liability for Oregon, or a decrease in liability for Oregon. It's gonna depend upon the federal change, but it can work both ways. But again, the rolling reconnect just automatically connects to those. So that's the key decision point there. And then the static connection, it's as of a certain date. So then there's a change at the federal level. The question then for Oregon becomes, does Oregon want to connect to or adopt that federal change? As opposed to the rolling reconnect, where it is, does Oregon want to disconnect from that federal change? And again, that's just trying to lay out, what are these policy decisions? I think it's probably fair to say there's not one right answer or wrong answer. We do see states do different connection points. Adjusted gross income is the more popular of the two. And again, that chart that Chris spoke about earlier can display that. But again, it's kind of trying to weigh the pros and the cons, or how the state wants to move forward, because there are policy implications for how and where to connect.
Representative Reschke, did you have a question earlier?
I did, and then I thought I answered it, but if I get a chance to ask one, I will, if that's okay.
That'll teach me to. Yes, you, please do, go ahead.
Thank you. Kyle, so I'm just thinking about the static connection here versus the rolling connection. And it seems like on a static connection, because it's a point in time, you're going to have a lot more. So let's say the federal government does something in December and the legislature doesn't meet until February of next year. And we do nothing. We continue on as we were if we were in the static connection world, from the federal government doesn't impact us at all, whatever they did on those points where we statically connect. If we rolling reconnect, then we would pick up those changes and opt out of the ones we don't like. But with the static connection, we would have to opt in to things we do like, quote unquote. It just seems like the static connection model makes a lot more work for the legislature to be timely, depending on when the federal government does its changes.
Yes, Representative Reschke, in terms when the federal government makes changes late in December, that is definitely challenging on both sides, yes, to your point. And I think it will depend upon whether the question is, let's say there's 10 changes made at the federal level. Is it kind of well known that it's likely that 9 of them are going to would be adopted? So if there's a static connection, you know the state's going to adopt at least 9 of them. One of them, maybe it's a little unknown. Then you still have like one decision point, but it does come to the legislature. Well, how do we do that? Whereas on the flip side, if you know the state's going to connect to 9 and they're automatically connected, the question then becomes, from a rolling reconnect, people are asking, well, are they going to disconnect from it? And I think it changes the question and how that's being posed, but it's still kind of one of those where the state has that policy discretion, certainly. But I guess it kind of comes down to, is it easier to disconnect from something, or is it easier to actively connect to something? and some of the implications, I suppose, for policymakers on just the discussion and how that works. But I know that's one of the things that the CPAs brought up yesterday is just anytime there's a late federal change, and when they make that federal change in, say, late 2020 and have it apply to tax year 2020, it always adds some difficulty on how they think they should proceed.
Right.
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, Madam Chair, I will pause for one more second here if there's any other questions on the personal income tax side of things, and then go ahead and segue, and Kate from LRO will pick up things from here for the corporate tax side.
Okay, let's wait just a moment to see if any other committee members had questions on the personal income side before we switch to the next analyst. Okay, let's move on. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Kyle. For the record, I am Caitlin Harger from the Legislative Revenue Office. And as Kyle mentioned, I'm going to talk through the corporate tax side of this. There are a lot of things that parallel here to the discussion that Kyle led just minutes ago or seconds ago. So I'll try to highlight those comparisons and where things are very similar, as well as where things change a little bit. So broadly speaking, we're going to have the same discussion that Kyle presented. I'll talk about the method of conformity, meaning rolling versus static. And then I'll talk about the starting point. And like Chris mentioned, in the corporate taxation world where things are less creative necessarily than in the PIT world, we're going to refer to this as different lines. And these line numbers refer to different spots on the federal tax form. So I'll go through that discussion in a minute. In the same vein as Kyle discussed here, the method of conformity, a rolling connection means effectively an automatic connection to federal changes. So if the federal, if at the federal level, tax law changes the concept of taxable income, we are tied to that in this rolling reconnect framework. Now, Kyle, can you go to the next slide for me? Thank you. And so the next slide talks about the starting point. So I'm going to talk about the lines here a little bit. This refers to
Representative Reschke has his hand up. Rep Reschke? Not anymore.
Be on mute.
Chair, are you still there?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. I was on mute. I never do that. I don't know what happened. So may I ask a question?
Sure.
All right, thank you. Caitlin, sorry to interrupt you as you're just getting started here, but when you talk about corporate tax connection, I recall the conversation earlier about corporate excise tax versus corporate income tax and that they're a little different. Is this encompass, when you say corporate tax connection, are you talking about both of those? Or are you talking about the excise or the income, or am I off in my thinking here?
So Chair Nathanson and Representative Reschke, I am talking about the excise tax here when I discuss today. That was a great question. You're not off. The income tax, because it makes up such a smaller portion of the returns and the number of or the amount of the tax liability, we don't focus on that as much. So especially today with these line numbers, I'm referring to the excise tax return.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much.
So talking about where our starting point is on the corporate tax side, the corporate excise tax return at the federal level, or the corporate tax return at the federal level, is the 1120. And then in Oregon, it's the OR20. So there's kind of a tie there into the form names. But we tie to line 28 on the federal form. And so, like Chris mentioned before, if you're talking to someone who works in corporate taxation or is familiar with these topics, often they'll refer to, oh, that's a line 28 state, or that's a line 30 state. So we effectively are a line 28 state. Line 28, and this is part of the reason we refer to this by line number and not by title, because the title of line 28 is taxable income before net operating loss deductions and special deductions, and that can be quite a mouthful. So we take line 28, then you would subtract away, and you can see this on the form, which I'll show a little bit later, but you subtract away net operating losses and other special deductions, and that leaves you with your federal taxable income. So Oregon says, rather than taking those things away, we're just going to start at line 28. And Kyle, if you could go to the next slide. Thank you. So here I've shown a little bit of a snapshot of the form to save you from looking at the entire thing. Like I mentioned, this is the 1120. So this is the corporate income tax return at the federal level. This is an IRS form. And here I've shown line 28, 29, A, B, and C, and line 30. So line 28 is where Oregon ties to. Line 29 deducts net operating losses and other special deductions, with the total amount of deductions on 29 coming in at 29C. And then line 30 gets to federal taxable income. And Kyle, if you could go to the next slide, that would be great. One thing I wanna point out here is an example of how this comes up in current policy. So like I said, that we are tied to line 28. When the CARES Act passed last March, I believe, and we were in the midst of the pandemic, one of the big questions was, how does the CARES Act affect Oregon? And through our research, we found that there is this net operating loss piece that might have a large impact on Oregon. And Kyle has covered that in a lot of the committee discussions recently. And this is a great example of how our connection to federal tax law changes which aspects of federal law affect Oregon. So on the corporate side, unlike the personal income side, which Kyle's talked about, on the corporate side, because we're tied to line 28, the federal tax changes to net operating losses, which occur on line 29, don't flow through to Oregon. So on the personal income side, we were tied to those changes and they did flow through, and you heard Kyle talk about that. The reason it doesn't flow through on the corporate side is because of this connection point. Now, had we been in line 30 state or in line 30 states, if we connected to that line, then the net operating loss change at the federal level would have affected us. So this connection point can determine which aspects of federal law flow through automatically to Oregon. Kyle, could you go to the next slide, please? Thank you. And I think I just talked through that. So if you could go to the following slide. Thank you. Finally, I've included an example here. And I'm sorry, there's a mistake on this slide. It should say an example of corp connection. So I'll make a note to change that. Very similar to what Kyle walked through. And the difference here is going to be just that we're talking about a corporate taxpayer. So I've made up a random corporation A. They are filing an 1120 at the federal level, but they only operate within Oregon. That's for simplicity. Suppose that federal law made a change that said any interest income you receive is completely tax-free. So you're not going to include it on your form. Under current law, let's say that this company had $200 million in income separate from their interest income. And that in the last tax year, in their last tax year, they had $100,000 in interest income. Under current law, without that exemption in the example, their total income would be $200,100,000 at both the federal level and the Oregon level, because this company is only operating within Oregon. So its Oregon income is its federal income. We're kind of setting aside apportionment for now. And then under this federal law change in the example, so if all interest income was exempt, we would see their income on the top line still stay at 200 million. The interest income would show up as zero on the return because it was exempt, or it would be excluded from the return. And so we would see an income difference of that $100,000 of interest income in this example. I tried to keep this very similar to Kyle so you can see kind of the parallel here. Another layer of complexity that we perhaps will discuss at a different time, but I didn't include in this presentation, is apportionment. So what if this company operated outside of Oregon as well? Then we would take apportionment factors and apply that to the right-hand side of this example. So with that, Kyle, if you could go to the next slide. Yes, okay, so I think that's all that I had for the corporate side, and we're happy to take any questions as usual. Thanks.
So I was kind of amused when you were saying that we refer to states as being, for example, a line 28 state or a line 30 state, because it's easier than saying the title. Mm-hmm. People love acronyms. So does that mean that the CPAs and the economists don't like saying TIBNOL-DASD? That's well, it.
Madam Chair, I think that's a good suggestion for us to consider in the future for that acronym. I haven't heard it yet, but I'm sure those listening will think about it.
I used to actually say it, TIBNOL-DASD. Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could we take a look at that slide again with the example that Caitlin had up earlier with the Oregon versus federal? That one, correct, thanks. So Caitlin, could you walk through a scenario where the line interest income wasn't interest income, but was net operating loss? So a line 29, I guess, A entry, how would that then work through on the federal and Oregon side?
Sure.
So I don't, yeah, so just so I get an idea.
Mm-hmm. So Chair Nathanson and Representative Reschke, I will think through this kind of out loud, and then I'm happy to send another written example to the committee for reference later. That might be helpful. So if we had a starting income of $200 million and a net operating loss of $100,000, in fact, yeah, so then the difference between those two on the total income line would be our federal taxable income if there were no other changes. So federal taxable income would decline by that $100,000 because that net operating loss was counted at the federal level. Then within Oregon, we would start not with the federal taxable income, but we would start with that $200 million number. And what Oregon's treatment of that net operating loss would be, it would depend on the taxpayer. I believe in Oregon, for corporations, they can be carried forward but not backward. But happy to go through a detailed example on that on paper for the committee. But it would show up a little bit differently because, Rep. Reschke, like you pointed out, it's below our connection point.
Okay, thank you for that. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Committee, any discussion on what we've heard so far? Well, I'm going to ask about a situation here, just because sometimes it's the elephant in the room about connecting or disconnecting, and changes that the federal government may have made 10 years ago or just last year. If the federal government makes a decision and it flows automatically to Oregon, that means that the taxpayer gets a tax benefit at the federal level and also a tax benefit at the state level. If the state were not, and please, any of the LRO economists, correct me if I'm characterizing this in an unfair or inaccurate way. If the state were connected differently or chose not to be connected to a particular action that happened, the taxpayer would still get the federal benefit, but would not get a state benefit. And it seems that often the federal benefit is worth more than the state benefit. Was all of that accurate so far?
Yes, that's correct. To try and tie this discussion into other topics that the committee discusses is that I'm going to go back to my simplistic characterization. Every tax consists of two pieces. You have a tax base, what you're taxing, and then the tax rate. And these connection points are really what is going to be Oregon's starting tax base. We have our own rates, 5, 7, 9, 9.9 on the PIT side, 6.6, 7.6 on the corp side. At the federal level, the personal income tax range from 10% to 34-37%, somewhere in the mid-30s. Kyle can jump in there if he remembers exactly. And on the corp side, I think we're at a flat 21%. So the changes that we're generally talking about are to the tax base. So when Congress makes a change and reduces the federal tax base that flows through to Oregon, our tax base is smaller. If Oregon disconnects from a provision, that means we're saying we're not going to reduce our tax base. The value difference between the federal provision and the state provision lies in the tax rates. So let's go with a 9% rate for Oregon. That's the value at the federal level. If the taxpayer is in the 25-32% tax bracket, that's why that's more valuable. And similarly, on the corp side, the math is a little easier there because you're basically talking about a 7.6% rate at the state level and 21% at the federal level.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, if I could just add one thing that I didn't include earlier that I meant to was, if you, outside of a base connection that Chris was just describing, you can't have changes at the federal level related to, say, a federal tax credit. And in that case, that is downstream from Oregon's connection. So in that way, if there's a new federal tax credit that's put in place, in many ways, there's no relation here to Oregon. At the risk of complicating things, there can be a little bit of a feedback through Oregon's federal tax subtraction that we have on our personal income tax side of things. And that's where sometimes you can see this feed-through effect for, say, a federal tax credit change. But otherwise, it's like that's not part of Oregon's base. So a federal tax credit, if they make a federal tax credit at the federal level, it doesn't automatically make a tax credit here in Oregon.
There's another thing that is pretty interesting to me. I'll try to ask it in a theoretical in a way that's more generalized, because I don't want to talk only about the CARES Act, but I am recalling that when LRO did the analysis of the CARES Act that was passed by Congress, there were certain provisions that ended up affecting our tax base so that it was a net gain to Oregon, or a gain. What a provision may have meant a gain to Oregon's revenue, other provisions were a loss to Oregon's revenue. Can you think, other than the CARES Act, can you think of other types of changes that the federal government makes that result in a gain to the state's revenue?
One of the, I'm waiting to see if Kyle or Kate want to jump in.
Because usually we're envisioning losses, but.
One of the ones that happened recently, the biggest one in memory is the 1986 Tax Reform Act that really broadened the federal tax base. And that's when Oregon went from, I think, a 5-bracket system to a 3-bracket system. More recently, the example that comes to mind is the itemized deduction for medical expenses. Mm-hmm. For the longest time, that deduction was expenses that exceeded 7.5% of a taxpayer's AGI. That's how much they got to deduct on their Schedule A, and we were tied to that. When the feds went to a 10%, that basically lowered that deduction, that expanded the base, and we were tied to that. A more recent example in the Tax Cut and Jobs Act was the elimination in Schedule A of, I believe it was miscellaneous deductions. That deduction was removed from the Schedule A, and we were tied to that. So both of those were technically revenue raisers for Oregon. They were embedded in a lot of other policy decisions, but those were examples where the base was expanded and thinking on a very specific policy base.
Thanks. It illustrates that there's an awful lot of detail and an awful lot of complexity. And I'm also recalling what Mr. Easton just mentioned, which is the impact may not be direct, but it may be subsequent. I think you used the term feedback. You know, there's an effect that happens down the line.
And to build on Kyle's point about the credits, you have the earned income tax credit, which is one. The federal earned income tax credit is calculated the way it is. There's a lot of machinery and reasoning behind that. Oregon has an earned income tax credit, and ours is just either 9% or 12% of the federal credit. So that can be an example where if there are changes made to the federal EIC, then it affects that credit. I think that's part of what Kyle was trying to add in there at the end there.
Thank you. Mr. Alanak, did you want to talk about the other document now? And we'll sure. see if other committee members then come up with some additional questions or comments.
Sure. And I'll just touch on this. This one is kind of thick, and I think it's meant more as a resource, but I can certainly share my screen and describe that a little bit. So there are five pages to the document, and this first one just tries to take the terminology that Kate and Kyle was using to create this 2x2 grid. So you have basically your starting point, the where, and the connection type is the how. And this just tries to show some of the combinations of you can have AGI, static and AGI, or rolling and AGI, or rolling and taxable, and static and taxable. So the document is set up with an attempt to be readable, where let's start with the personal income tax, and it's organized by connection type. So the first column here takes all of the states and puts them either into, these are the rolling reconnect states, these are the static connection states, and these are cases where it's not applicable. And so you could read this table where you want to look at, well, I want to look at all the states that have a rolling reconnect, and that's this group. And then you can see where these are the states that are connected to AGI, and these are the states that are connected to federal taxable income. And that's the main point of the tables. These two other columns here are just a couple of statistics that help inform why certain states might spend more time, more state legislatures spend more time discussing the connection. And this column here, personal income tax as a percent of 2019 state taxes. So this is just the state level, so not local governments. And the point here, the red highlights are the states that have more than, I think it was 50% of their state taxes come from the personal income tax. And you can see Oregon here is at 71%. So the higher this number, the more important the topic is for a given state. And basically, I think it's all the members are aware, the reason ours is so high is that we don't have a state sales tax. And then this last column on the right is the personal income tax percentage of 2018 state and local taxes. So now we're just taking the state and local and putting it all into one bucket. That's just a rough metric we use using census data. So that's this table. And then you'll notice a pattern as we move to the next one. It's again, personal income taxes. The first two columns are switched. So the first column is the starting point. The second column is the rolling or static. So here, if you want to look at, well, I want to see all the states that have a starting point of AGI, that's this group of states. And then it's broken out by connection type. Basically, this is an old-fashioned paper version of a database that you'd have where you could just filter on it and then pull it up. And actually, as I say that, if there's interest, we can send this to you in a spreadsheet. But that's all this is. Then the next two tables get down to the corporate tax. It's the same pattern where this first page is the connection type, so rolling or static, and then the starting point. And instead of personal income taxes as a percentage of either state taxes or state and local taxes, it's the corporate income tax. And then the last one is just these two columns switched. You have the starting point and then what kind of connection. So it's really just meant to be a resource for you to digest over time and look at. We always get the question of, well, what do other states do? And I would add a somewhat cautionary note to this. It is challenging to keep up with all 50 states and whatever changes they may be making. So this was put together, you can see the data on the bottom there, back in September. And it can be tricky. There are some national organizations who provide this information. Federation of Tax Administrators, I think the Tax Foundation probably provides something. But we have known from our own personal experience that they have gotten Oregon characterized incorrectly. And my best guess as to the reason why is a very natural way to figure out how a state is connected is to pull up their tax return. So for Oregon, if you pull up the Form 40, the Oregon Personal Income Tax Return, you'll see that the starting point there is federal AGI. And the reason the Department of Revenue does that is that it makes without getting into all the details, it's a lot easier and a much more natural way to fill out the taxes. So I'm going to stop sharing my screen unless somebody had a particular question about something on there.
I want to acknowledge the tremendous amount of work that LRO has put into preparing that information for us. Thank you. Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chris, I was not here at the beginning of the committee, and I think you discussed where this document is. I looked on meeting materials, didn't see it there. Is this something you sent out or is something you will send out? Or is it on the LRO website?
It should be in meeting materials.
Okay.
I don't have it in front of me. I think it's called State Connection.
Points. There it is. Okay, thank you. Very good, thank you.
Committee, this is the only material that we're covering in today's meeting. So if you have comments and questions, this is the time. We don't have to fill all the time. We can adjourn early when we're finished with our conversation. Representative Marsh.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I was just thinking about the question of predictability or stability for CPAs or businesses or individuals who are filling out their tax forms. And I'm wondering if there is a case to be made, and it'd be interesting to see the experience in other states, if it's actually, you know, the situation that we have now means that we are frequently debating whether or not we want to take special action on a change that's been made at the federal level. We've had that experience frequently over the last couple of years, which means that individuals across the state who are waiting for us to make a decision are constantly trying to second guess what's going to go on in the legislature. I wonder if there's a case to be made that if you simply clearly connect at the AGI level, then the signal to anybody who's waiting for decisions is clearly that there will be a decision process. Maybe there's just as much uncertainty there as not, but I'm just trying to figure out what the messaging is around the decision to connect at either place in reality, given the fact that we keep second guessing our decisions decisions that are made at the federal level.
I think there are a couple of layers to that, and you hinted at them in the question. Mm-hmm. The way, for example, Kyle described kind of upstream and downstream, you have total income, AGI, taxable income. In that order, the numbers get smaller, so the tax base is smaller, so the legislature is automatically deciding to connect to those things. Any of those can be changed during any session. To the point of the debate, I think it's just the nature of adopting all of the changes and then selectively disconnecting, or adopting none of the changes and selectively connecting. So I'm not sure either way would end the debate. It would change the nature of the debate. Because right now, to your point, the way I think about it, and I think Kyle was describing it a similar way, where we have the rolling reconnect. So we're basically, the default is, okay, we'll take all of the changes. And the debate is, okay, we want to disconnect from A, B, and C. Whereas if we just had the static connection, it would be, well, I want to connect to everything except A, B, and C. Whatever the A, B, and C are. So I think it changes the nature. I don't know. I mean, it is very much a political perspective. And so I'm not, I think it would change the nature. I don't know that it would end the debate per se.
Thank you.
Representative Pham.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I really appreciate this conversation. My head is spinning with trying to process all these considerations. I just wanted to make sure that I'm understanding this correctly. Chris, you mentioned, you highlighted in the graph how because Oregon is so heavily reliant on income tax, that our decisions about where to connect are particularly maybe more met, the impact is a lot bigger for us than it would be for other states. Is that correct? First, that's my first question.
Proportionally speaking, yeah. If you had a state where half of their general fund was the income tax and half of it was the sales tax, then connection is kind of half of the debate. Whereas if a state only, their only source was the income tax, then it's all of the debate. That's the point I was trying to convey.
I see. And I'm just trying to make sure I also understand the static connection. It does seem like, as I think Rep. Marsh was saying, I'm starting to understand, it's if we connect on a static basis with a specific point in time, that would provide us the opportunity as a state to review all of the changes that are made to make sure that the impacts are of the tax policy changes that we're considering do reflect our state's values in terms of equity, making sure we're protecting low-income communities, for example. Is that correct? The static disconnection would actually offer us that that ability to debate more?
I'm not, more or less, yes. Debate, I think the nature of the debate might change. And 2020 provides a pretty good example because we had the rolling reconnect, Congress passed the CARES Act, and then there were discussions about disconnecting from some of those provisions. If instead we had a fixed connection, and let's just, for the sake of this discussion, say we were tied into federal law as it existed on December 31st, 2019, like we had a frozen connection, then in March the CARES Act passes, all of those provisions would not have automatically affected us, but the debate would have been, okay, we need to, you know, there are different viewpoints, but from some people's perspectives, it would be, no, we need to connect to these or we need to connect to everything.
Right.
So that's why I think there would still be a debate. I think the nature of the, my best guess is that the nature of the debate would change.
I see. Thank you very much.
Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chris, so we've been kind of thinking this, we've been living in this scenario the last 4 years, and most of the members of the committee who have been here for 4 years or less, except for Representative Smith and LRO, we've been living under a Trump administration and mostly a Republican Congress, where tax policy was made that passed along on the rolling reconnect tax expenditures. My question is, under a Biden administration and a Democrat-driven Congress, can the opposite be said? So if they were to pass a policy that eliminated tax expenditures, would those automatically also rolling reconnect to Oregon, that we would lose those as well?
I think regardless of the makeup of Congress or the occupant of the White House, the issue of the tax base, there is a two-edged sword, if that's the right analogy, where the feds can change policy though so that they can increase the tax base or decrease the tax base. And that's why I think the key thing is the nature of the debate, as opposed to, okay, is there debate or not debate? Can we make a default decision that everybody will agree on? I don't know about that, because you have to choose a connection point and a type of connection one way or the other. And it's all about the debate, I think. It's kind of this opt-in, and Kyle used the words opt-in or opt-out. And that is one way to think about it. I think that's a fair way to think about it.
Thank you.
This is a really good overview, and I appreciate the questions and observations that have been coming in from the committee members. For anyone who hasn't spoken yet, do you have any questions or issues that haven't been covered already? I don't want to skip over anybody inadvertently. Mr. Alanak, any final thoughts on the information that's been presented to us or the conversation before we conclude this meeting?
I actually did take some notes. I think I will opt out of expressing those right now. It's more detail. Somebody, one of the members, mentioned their head was spinning with the detail. Our goal is actually the opposite, not to spin heads, but to provide clarity. This is a lot of detail, in my experience, it does take time to think about it and digest, okay, what does this mean? What does that mean? What are some of the implications? I think some of the points that I had will come up when the committee hears a reconnect, but it's nothing major. I'm not trying to be coy. It's just additional detail that I think the committee will revisit when a bill is in front of your committee, Madam Chair, and then we'll be able to go over that at that time. I just don't want to drown people in detail.
Good. Representative Smith.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I was just going to share with the committee one of the tools I've instituted over the last period of years is, if I don't know the definition of something while we're discussing it, I immediately look it up. And so it makes my ability to understand things go much, much smoother. And I know that's very elementary and we're all adults, but I would just share that as a best practice of looking up the words you don't understand immediately as we're discussing. So just wanted to share with my friends if something works for me.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Smith. Anything else before we conclude the meeting for the day? Okay. Thanks, everybody. See you next time.
Bye, gang.
We're adjourned.